There's a question that I'd like to ask and ask us to think about a little bit, and that's, how much time did you spend preparing for church? Talking about maybe it began yesterday or last night as you were washing and ironing the clothes that you're going to wear. Maybe, like my wife, you laid them out or hung them up so they'd be ready and they'd look fine for service this morning. Maybe you showered and shaved last night. I prefer to shave in the evening. Sometimes I don't get to and I have to end up shaving in the morning. But if you're like me, maybe you've done all these things preparing the night before. You've verified that you answered all the questions for your class lesson, for the study this morning, Revelation. Maybe even some who are great forward thinkers prepared lunch already beforehand and just left it ready. So all you got to do is heat it up. Or maybe you put it in the crock pot. You've got everything taken care of, and you started doing that all yesterday. Of course, then there's some preparations maybe this morning. You had to get up early, so you prepared for that. Maybe you even went to bed earlier last night so you wouldn't be tired as you got up earlier. You got the kids up and got them ready, perhaps, as the case in our home. Made sure you had a good breakfast so that you can concentrate. You're not distracted by your stomach rumbling or distracting other people. Spent time getting well-dressed. We're here for something that's important. Maybe put on makeup or perfume or cologne. You brushed your hair. All these things that we go through as we're getting prepared for church. And then as we're heading out, we be sure to have our Bible and the class materials and all that. And then we leave home plenty early so we get here on time. I know we all understand about that. However, there's something else you really ought to think about. And that's how much time have we really spent preparing for worship. Not just preparing to be here. Not just being well-dressed or being well-prepared in terms of having our answers on the Bible sheet or having the kids ready or having eaten well. Not just how prepared were we to be here on time, but how prepared are we for worship? Because that's the reason that we're really here. And I think it's worth our looking into. We look in the Old Testament, there's so much worship that's commanded by God for the Jew. Those verses we looked at in Deuteronomy 16 are part of that commanded worship, but let's look at Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31, verses 9 through 13. So Moses wrote this law and delivered it to the priests, the sons of Levi, who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and to all the elders of Israel. And Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at the appointed time in the year of release, at the Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Gather the people together, men and women and little ones, and the stranger who is within your gates, that they may hear and that they may learn to fear the Lord your God, and carefully observe all the words of this law, and that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land which you crossed the Jordan to possess. Every 7 years, there was this command from God that the Jews would come together in the year of release. That was every 7 years, and Deuteronomy 15 tells us about how that worked. We're not going to get into those details now, but this is when they would make this meeting of the whole community. They would do it during the time of the Feast of Tabernacles, also called the Feast of Booths or the Feast of Ingathering, as they brought in the last of their harvest. And the law was to be read before all Israel, everybody. Look at the detail we're given. Men and women and little ones. We see this again in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, as everybody who could understand was together for the reading of the law. Even the stranger within your gates needs to be present for this reading of the law. And there's the reason that they may hear, that they may learn to fear the Lord your God. And there's the detail there that they may carefully observe all the words of this law. And that their children who have not known it so far, who haven't been participants in this, the under 7-year-olds perhaps, who hadn't been to one of these, may hear and learn to fear the Lord. That's every 7 years there was that worship that was commanded. That was worship as they would come together to hear the law read. Well, the Jews also had, as we noticed in Deuteronomy 16 earlier, this 3 times a year commanded worship, this commanded communal worship. Deuteronomy 16 we looked at already, but I'll read them again. Then we'll look at some of the other details that we get in Exodus 23. Deuteronomy 16, verses 16 and 17. 3 times a year all your males shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, at the feast of unleavened bread, the feast of weeks, and at the feast of tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. Exodus 23 describes the same thing. You get a little bit different details. Exodus 23, verses 14 through 17. 3 times you shall keep a feast to me in the year. You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. You shall eat unleavened bread 7 days, as I commanded you at the time appointed in the month of Abib, for in it you came out of Egypt. None shall appear before me empty. And the feast of harvest, the first fruits of your labors which you have sown in the field, and the feast of ingathering at the end of the year, when you have gathered in the fruit of your labors from the field. 3 times in the year all your males shall appear before the Lord God. Let's look at the details there. We got these three. It's the Feast of Unleavened Bread. We know it is Passover. It's in March and April. The Feast of Weeks, we know it more commonly as Pentecost. It's also called the Feast of the Harvest. It's done in May and June. Then there's the Feast of Tabernacles we just looked at. That's the Feast of Ingathering or Booths. It's in September or October. This was a command that all of the males should appear before the Lord God. They would all go to Jerusalem. We know that's where the Lord chose. So they would all go to Jerusalem during these three feasts. And there was this other command that was part of that. None shall appear before me empty. And we really learned from Deuteronomy that it means empty-handed. They were to bring a sacrifice. And it's interesting what Deuteronomy says about that, because there's an implication here. Deuteronomy 16, going back there, verse 17, as he says, none shall appear before the Lord empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. If you bring nothing, you're saying the Lord has given you nothing. That's the implication. The Lord is saying, I'm only asking you to bring what I've given you. That's what you need to bring to me, that you're going to offer to me at these meetings 3 times a year. So they have every 7 years, 3 times a year, every man giving as he is able according to what God had given to him. And they also had a couple of things that were once a year. Leviticus 23. We get both of these in Leviticus 23. Verses 23 through 25 beginning. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the 7th month, on the 1st day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it, and you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. Well, this would be the Sabbath month, if you will, or the beginning of the 7th month, the Sabbath being on the 7th day. So they would remember this 7th month by this holy convocation on the 1st day. This is the Feast of Trumpets, sometime in September or October, the same time, by the way, as the Feast of Tabernacles, the same month. Possibly this was a males-only reunion. They were the ones who would have to be going up to Jerusalem anyway for this feast that was coming. But it was a holy convocation. The idea of a convocation is calling everyone together. The whole congregation would be involved even if not all of them went to Jerusalem. They would all be participating in this particular commanded commemoration, this worship. There would be no customary work. Nobody, not just the males who went to Jerusalem, but nobody could do work because this is a Sabbath. Then we get verses 26 through 32. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, also the 10th day of this 7th month shall be the Day of Atonement, shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. You shall do no work on that same day, for it is the Day of Atonement, to make atonement for you before the Lord your God. For any person who is not afflicted in soul on that same day shall be cut off from his people. Any person who does any work on that same day, that person I will destroy from among his people. You shall do no manner of work. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. It shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest. You shall afflict your souls. On the 9th day of the month at evening, from evening to evening, you shall celebrate your Sabbath. So again, this is the Day of Atonement. Perhaps the going up to Jerusalem is males only, but this is a holy convocation. The entire congregation should participate in all your dwellings, he made very clear. not just those who go up to Jerusalem. There's no work to be done, and you shall afflict your souls. Isaiah 58 lets us know very clearly that that's a description of fasting. This was the only prescribed fast for Israel. This was the only day that God commanded that they spend in fasting. It was on the Day of Atonement. But again, it's the whole congregation. They can do no work on this day because it's a Sabbath, and they must spend the time fasting. Well, those are the once-a-year meetings. Well, there's also once-a-month. Once-a-month worship that was prescribed and commanded by God. Numbers 28, verses 11 through 15. At the beginnings of your month, you shall present a burnt offering to the Lord. Two young bulls, one ram, and seven lambs in their first year without blemish. Three-tenths of an ephah of fine flour as a grain offering mixed with oil for each bull. Two-tenths of an ephah of fine flour as a grain offering mixed with oil for the one ram. And one-tenth of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil as a grain offering for each lamb, as a burnt offering of sweet aroma, an offering made by fire to the Lord. Their drink offering shall be half a hin of wine for a bull, one-third of a hin for a ram, and one-fourth of a hin for a lamb. This is the burnt offering for each month throughout the months of the year. Also, one kid of the goats as a sin offering to the Lord shall be offered besides the regular burnt offering and its drink offering. What detail God goes into describing this once-a-month communal worship that was going on, congregational worship, if you will, the entire congregation of the Jews. It's called in Psalm 81, New Moon, or the Feast of the New Moon. That's how they counted the month's beginning was at the New Moon. They were on a lunar calendar. We've talked about that some before. So they would have this Sabbath, this Feast of the New Moon, and here's the offering that would be given up. It was at the beginnings of your months, as I pointed out, the New Moons. A congregational sacrifice. This was done by the priests on behalf of the congregation. Not every single person would be doing this. And then you get, of course, their once a week commanded worship. In Numbers 28 also, verses 9 and 10, on the Sabbath day, this is what you offer, two lambs in their first year without blemish, two-tenths of an ephah of fine flour as a grain offering mixed with oil with its drink offering. This is the burnt offering for every Sabbath besides the regular burnt offering with its drink offering. Again, what we see is for every Sabbath. This was something done weekly, once a week. And it was a congregational sacrifice. This is commanded worship that God had given out to the Jew. 7 years, three times a year, once a month, once a week, and then daily. Commanded worship for the Jews daily. Chapter 28 of Numbers still, verses 1 through 8. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, command the children of Israel and say to them, my offering, my food for my offerings made by fire is a sweet aroma to me. You shall be careful to offer to me at their appointed time. You shall say to them, this is the offering made by fire, which you shall offer to the Lord. Two male lambs in their first year without blemish, day by day, as a regular burnt offering. He goes on to describe one in the morning and one at twilight. A congregational sacrifice every single day. These were to be offered up. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, there's another daily sacrifice, if you will. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 1 through 9, and this is as the law has been handed down. Deuteronomy 5, we have the Ten Commandments. Of course, Moses is reviewing the law with them. But Deuteronomy 6, beginning really verses 1 and following. This is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Therefore hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, that you may multiply greatly, as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You should talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Daily they would have these words on their tongue, in their heart, all over their house, all over their clothes. Daily they would be in contact with the Word of God. And if you will, it was a personal sacrifice. It wasn't a congregational one necessarily. All the congregation was doing it, but individually, personally, they were taking part in that sacrifice of themselves and their time daily. That's a lot of things that God commanded in worship for the Jew. There's many others. And there are even the occasional commands of worship, and I don't mean that just once in a while. It's the as the occasion warrants. There were things that needed to be done on certain occasions. We've seen some of those in the three times a year. What I'm talking about is really most of the offerings and sacrifices that were given, that were described in Leviticus chapters 1 through 7, are situational. They're occasional sacrifices. We're not going to read those seven chapters, by the way. I just wanted you to realize that as we're looking at those, we'll see certain words that come along. When a man offers a certain type of sacrifice, if a man offers this type of sacrifice, in Leviticus chapter 1, we get kind of a microcosm of what the first several chapters are about. And we see at verse 2, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when any one of you brings an offering to the Lord, you shall bring your offering of the livestock, of the herd, and of the flock. If his offering is a burnt sacrifice of the herd, let him offer a male without blemish. That's verse 3. If we go down to verse 10, if his offering is of the flocks, of the sheep or the goats, as a burnt sacrifice, he shall bring a male without blemish. Verse 14, if the burnt sacrifice of his offerings to the Lord is of birds, then he shall bring his offering of turtle doves or young pigeons. All of these different situations called for a different type of sacrifice. We see this continuing on with the grain offerings and on through the first seven chapters. They're when and if offerings. They're occasion offerings. These are peace offerings and offerings for drawing near. In fact, really, most of the law dealt with occasional worship to God. That is, as the situation warrants. And what I want us to see with all this is that the obedience to God in doing what he said is a form of worship to him. Giving him what he's asked for is a form of worship. As he told them, don't come empty-handed before me. When they went to worship, when they gave him what he asked for, they were worshiping. And that's what we're seeing here with most of the offerings and most of the law. Leviticus 11 through 15 talks about what they could eat and what they couldn't. Talks about what to do if someone's leprous. Talks about what to do if there's diseases found in a house. There's all these rituals and cleansings that are occasional moments of worship as the occasion warrants. The law of cleansed lepers, for example, in Leviticus 14 is very detailed and talks about the cleansing. If a leper has become clean, let's read there a few of those just to get the idea. This shall be the law of the leper for the day of his cleansing, Leviticus 14:2. He shall be brought to the priest. The priest shall go out of the camp, and the priest shall examine him. And indeed, if leprosy is healed in the leper, then the priest shall command to take for him who is to be cleansed two living and clean birds, cedar wood, scarlet, and hyssop, and all these details of what needs to be done so that this man can be considered clean and allowed to come back into the community. It was worship to God as they did these things, as they obeyed what he said. In Mark chapter 1, Jesus cleansed the leper. And he says, don't say anything to anybody, but go, show yourselves to the priest, do those things which God commanded through Moses. The leper went out and told everybody. What Jesus was telling him was, you go worship God. You go do what God has commanded. That'll be the best thing you can do. What we're looking at is that all of this commanded worship required preparation on their part. God let them know ahead of time exactly what they would need to be able to worship him. He let them know with great detail what he expected of them. He gave them specific and detailed instruction. And he said in his exhortations over and again, I'm giving you this so that you may carefully observe all the words of this law, that you may diligently teach them to your children, to your families, to their children, and to the stranger within your gates. God expected those details to be carried out. And he said, Don't you dare come before me empty-handed. I've told you what I want. I've given you what you need to bring. Don't come before me empty-handed. No faithful Jew would worship unprepared. In fact, Leviticus chapter 8 and chapter 9 is the ritual of the priests before they could go in to begin their priestly service. It took a week of purification rites before the priests could even go in. And then we get chapter 10 when Nadab and Abihu, unprepared, made the grave error that cost them their lives. You better bet from that day forward the priests were prepared when they went into the temple to do their work. No faithful Jew would worship unprepared. Well, that's the Jews. But we know as Christians we are also commanded to worship God. In a lot of ways. There's our once a week worship. It was mentioned as we took the Lord's Supper this morning that in Acts chapter 20 and verse 7, we're told that they gathered on the first day of the week. On the first day of the week is our once a week meeting. The disciples came together to break bread. Acts chapter 20 verse 7 tells us, when they had come together to break bread, Paul, ready to depart the next day, spoke to them, continued his message until midnight. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, again, verses that we know very well, 1 Corinthians chapter 16, we read these often when we're going to give of our means, concerning the collection for the saints. As I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. The older translations say laying something aside at home, and we'll talk about that in just a moment, or laying something apart at home. But the obvious intent of this of these verses is that they're then going to bring what they laid aside and give it into a common treasury. But this is what is done on the first day of the week. In Hebrews 10:24, speaking of something else that should be done, not only on the first day of the week, but certainly it's fitting to see this way. Consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, a continuous action, but exhorting one another. Some have the habit of not even assembling together. That's a commanded part of worship for the Christian, is be together with other Christians. That's at least once a week that we can say those things are sure. But so much of what God commands is daily. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Don't just do it once a week. You always present your bodies a living sacrifice. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. You may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Paul described his living sacrifice. We have the other verses there, 2 Timothy 2:15, the diligence needed in study, 1 Peter 3:15, being ready, having Christ sanctified in your heart, that's an always thing, being ready to give a reason for the hope, 2 Peter 3:18, growing in the grace and knowledge of the Lord. All of these things are daily commanded acts of worship. But Paul, as he's speaking of this concept of a giving yourself as a living sacrifice, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 7 through 10, he says, we have a treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellence of the power may be of God and not of us. We are hard pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carrying about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our body. There wasn't a moment that went by that Paul wasn't aware of the dying of Jesus. He carried the dying of Jesus about in his own body as he presented himself also a living sacrifice. He did it so much that he was able to say in Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, Galatians 2 verse 20, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. As Christians, that's where we stand. We are a living sacrifice. Christ offered himself on the cross. He now lives in us as we are daily giving ourselves to him. And then there is the occasional command. Again, this is most of our worship, as it was with the Jews. It's not just stuff that we do on the first day. Our occasional worship is as the situation warrants. What does God expect us to do? Prayer, 1 Thessalonians 5:17, pray without ceasing. There's always a situation that warrants prayer. Always. We can always find a reason for prayer, of all different kinds of prayer. Thanksgiving or supplication, offering up vehement prayers to our God on behalf of others. James 5:16 tells us about that. James 5:16, confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. That's an example of occasional worship. There's always an occasion for prayer. Study, Ephesians chapter 3, verses 3 through 5. When you read, you may understand my knowledge and the mystery of Christ. There's always occasion for learning more about Christ. As we pointed out already, 2 Timothy 2:15, which is giving diligence. 2 Timothy 2:15, I'll read the verse there because it's interesting what comes after it in 2 Timothy 2. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And as we go down through the list, we get to verse 24, as we're in the same context there of rightly dividing and being diligent. A servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, patient, in humility, correcting those who are in opposition, if God perhaps will grant them repentance, so that they may know the truth, and that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive by him to do his will. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 12, you ought to be teachers, the writer says, but you have need of someone teaching you. They should have had plenty of occasion to have been studying to the point of being able to teach others. Singing, isn't that interesting? It's something we typically only think about in terms of the worship service, in terms of being together in this setting. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 18 and 19. Do not be drunk with wine, in which is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. If you ever encourage someone with a song when you weren't in a worship assembly like this, with a spiritual song, with a psalm. Sometimes we get together in our homes and do that. But this seems like it was a spontaneous kind of overflow of the word of Christ as we see it in Colossians chapter 3. As he dwells in us richly, they would sing of Christ to one another. And so often in Paul's letters we see these little short poems that look like they were hymns that they would sing to one another. James chapter 5, verse 13, if you're happy, sing psalms. Express your joy in spiritual songs to God. Serving one another, again, sometimes we tend to think of this only in terms of the worship service. Galatians 6, verses 1 and 2, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Verses 9 and 10, let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are the household of faith, but only on Sunday. No. These are occasional. Whenever the occasion warrants, we should be involving ourselves in this kind of worship to God. Did you think of prayer and study and singing and serving as worship? You should. We shouldn't just see worship as when we're here at the building. Well, all that commanded worship requires preparation. Just as we saw with the Jews, they had to raise their animals so that they could then give them to the Lord. They had to be prepared in so many aspects, so many detailed aspects of sacrifices, so many detailed aspects of whether they were ritually clean or not, to be able to prepare and do the sacrifices. The specific instructions he gave the Jews, he also has given specific instructions to us. Be diligent, not ashamed. You know what the Lord expects of you. As we said of the Jews, a faithful Christian won't worship unprepared. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 17, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. The faithful Jew won't worship unprepared, neither would the faithful Christian. But sometimes in terms of public worship, we seem woefully unprepared. So there's a question, when does public worship begin? And what are my preparations in terms of public worship? And what does that say about my preparations in my private worship to God? We have to remember some governing principles over public worship. 1 Corinthians 14:40. I know the context here is speaking of spiritual gifts, but it was spiritual gifts that were being abused in public worship. And Paul lays down some guidelines that are very helpful. 1 Corinthians 14:40, though, the conclusion is, let all things be done decently and in order. And as he begins to detail for them the best way to handle the situation with the problem with the spiritual gifts, in verse 26 of 1 Corinthians 14, he says, let all things be done for edification. So there's our governing principles. There must be decency and order, and there must be edification when we're talking about public worship. Well, think about preaching. Sometimes it may not seem like it, but the sermons are prepared beforehand. I don't just come in and start saying whatever's on top of my head. I spend time preparing them. I know the other men who preach here. They also have prepared their sermons ahead of time. It's something that involves preparation. To be able to do it decently and orderly and to be able to edify others instead of just coming up here and saying whatever comes out. But prayer leaders, the ones who will be up here leading prayers, and also the people who will be praying, us, as we sit and participate, are we prepared beforehand? We have an opportunity coming up after our Sunday singing for a prayer session. We've been doing them for a few months now. We've been talking some about how we can make those better, how we can have them more organized and more edifying. That's a great opportunity to have time to prepare beforehand. You know ahead of time that we're going to be doing this. As you know, with the song service, it gives you time to prepare for what you'll be doing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a prayer that's offered up on the occasion of the need. But when we're speaking of public worship, there's a need for decency and order, and there's a need for edification, specifically through these prayers. When we're leading prayers through the worship service, we know a month in advance. I'm so appreciative that we have the schedule published back there. It may not sound like it because I always forget who's leading the prayer before my classes in the morning, but the point is that we know ahead of time who we are. We are ready for that, or we should be, as we come in here. Even the prayer leaders, which sometimes, you know, I'm not trying to be accusative, but I want us to understand that there's a need for that, and sometimes it feels like maybe we've just come in and, oh, I'm supposed to pray today. We're supposed to know ahead of time. We can be prepared for that. Song leaders. We've talked about this some. But certainly, we would expect the song leaders would prepare beforehand. Some I appreciate very much. They put together an entire theme. The songs all point to a similar message. The songs are all working at getting people to consider and think and exhort one another and encourage one another through the words that are being sung as we glorify God. We expect that to be prepared beforehand. As singers, are we preparing beforehand? Or do we sometimes come in here and, well, I recognize the tune, that's good enough, or do we pay attention to what we're singing to one another? Is there anything wrong with taking home a songbook and looking at hymns that we sing repeatedly and make sure that we understand what we're singing? Sing them like we mean them. It's part of preparation for worship. God has asked us to worship in song. At the Lord's table, certainly, we may be offended if we came in and the bread and the juice were not sitting there prepared beforehand. It's supposed to be. We've got to have these things in order. That's the Lord's Supper. But how often do we prepare our hearts and our minds beforehand? Is it just when we begin to sing the song before the supper? When we come in and we see the golden trays up here, do we then be, oh, I better think about what I'm doing? We've come here for that reason. To remember the Lord's sacrifice, the way He's taught us to do it. Are we prepared beforehand? And the offering, as we mentioned before, some of the versions say, lay aside at home. That's the idea. This is something prepared beforehand. It's not, I just come in and whatever's loose in my pocket, or, you know, if I remember, oh, I think I've got $20 in my account, and write something on a check and put it in there. It's something that's prepared ahead of time, something that's given forethought, something that's budgeted for, something that I know that I'm planning on giving to the Lord before I just come in and put it in. These are things that can help us as we're looking at preparing for the public part of our worship. The question, when does public worship begin, I think should be answered this way. Public worship is really just an extension of our daily worship. Look at how much of the occasional worship and how much of the daily worship the Jews were involved in. Do you think that on the Sabbath sacrifice, or do you think that on the sacrifices on the feast when they took their own animals up, or the sacrifices of their vow offerings or of their peace offerings, do you think that they fumbled with that because they really weren't used to it? They didn't really know what they were doing? Certainly not. They had been trained by reading what God said, by studying it. They had been trained by repetitively worshiping God the way He asked them to do. I'm not saying in a vain repetition. I'm saying do what God has said and do it until it becomes our life. It's the living sacrifice that He's asked us to give. Are we living worshipfully always so that then our public worship is just an extension of what we're already offering God? It's an extension in a way that'll be decent and ordered and edifying others as we worship God together. That's what God has asked us to give. Sermons, prayers, songs, taking the Lord's Supper, giving of our means, all of those things should be a reflection of our life as it's lived outside of the church. What I mean by that is outside of our meeting together with the church. We live with Christ everywhere we go. As Christians, that's our call. Our public worship should be a reflection of that. Maybe if things aren't going as they should in public worship, it's a reflection that things aren't going as they should in our private and our daily worship. I think we should reflect on that. I believe that all of us need to reflect on that. Paul said, I have died. Christ lives in me. It's not me anymore. It's Christ. The extension of public worship comes from our daily lives. If our hearts and minds only begin to tune to Christ when we're here, when we're assembled together, or in some cases, even when we're assembled together, we're elsewhere. I've seen it from here. I've been a victim of it from there. I know it happens. We get so easily tuned into our lives as they happen around us every day. But if our lives is not a daily expression of worship to Christ, where are we going to go? Where are our heads going to be? And we need to be here. But if we only manage to think of Christ while we're here assembled together, then we're truly lost. How much time did you spend preparing for worship today? I'm not talking about getting your clothes ready and getting up and eating and all that stuff that we think about. Are you prepared for worship or just for church? I hope you'll think about those things. I've had occasion to think an awful lot about it. I appreciate the brother who suggested this sermon, who exhorted me as we were talking about these things. And I think there's a need for us to consider all of this. Have we really put on Christ? We've put on our ties. We've got ourselves arranged neatly and orderly. But is our worship decent and orderly? Is it edifying because it's an extension of our true worship that we live every day? Well, we'd like to help you put on Christ today. The Bible teaches that He is the Son of God, that He came and He gave His life to be the price of sacrifice, to be the sacrifice and pay the price for our sins. We saw that the Jews daily had to partake in these sacrifices, that we're always looking forward to the one who would put an end to all that. Jesus did that. So we've been looking at these things today. This word was meant to bring conviction, was meant to bring people to the understanding of what God's plan is. If you understand that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and you'd be willing to come forward and confess his name, confessing that you're a sinner, but that you'd like him to remove that burden from you, you can this day be baptized in water for the remission of those sins. And you can begin living daily in your worship for Christ. And if as a Christian you haven't been living daily as you should, if you're facing some struggle spiritually or even physically, that you'd like the prayers of this congregation and our help, we stand ready to help you. Whatever your need may be, please make it known as we stand and sing to encourage you.